NBA basketball fans, welcome back to the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast. He's Marshall, I'm Chris, and we're here to talk hoops. What else are we going to talk about? We're sitting here Monday night, a little bit before the game tips off, the doubleheader, of course. The 6 o'clock game Central, Celtics and Boston, that'll be the last one we talk about just because it's about to start and well, it's about to finish, if we're being honest, especially with no Mitchell, it seems like, from the reports anyway that I just checked out on Twitter. So we will go Knicks, Pacers, Denver, Wolves, and then OKC and Dallas. And like I said, we'll end there. I mean, if Oklahoma City comes through tonight, we could have three out of the four tied at 2-2. I mean, that is really, really interesting. So we're going to break it all down. You know, this has been fun. It's pretty shocking. Now we got 2-2 Knicks Pacers. It kind of felt like the Knicks were going to pull away there for a second. They came on an injury. And then obviously Denver, that series with Timberwolves and Nuggets, dude. Just what are the odds that both teams lose both games on their fucking home court? It's crazy, man. It is crazy. And can Luka stay healthy in that damn thing? Every other minute, he's getting hurt. He damn near broke his nose, chipped a tooth in the last game. So we're going to break it all down here on the NBA Playoff Banter Podcast. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, welcome. It streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. You don't have to go to Blog Talk and Ropeadope and download the show directly there if you don't want to. You can find this here podcast under Ropeadope Radio on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio. Download the podcast app, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, Podbay, Podtail, and a host of other places. Just Google Ropeadope Radio. You'll find it. While you're at it, head on over to thegruelingtruth.com at Sports News 24. One more quick message from DirecTV Stream. It's playoff time. See the buckets and goals that will crown champions all on DirecTV Stream, plus save $30. Also, MLB is full swing. Home field advantage. DirecTV Stream carries the most local MLB games, so play ball for a limited time, $98.99 for the first 3 months. Just in general, for a sports pack for the DirecTV, just to sign up, it'll save you $14.99. Choose the DirecTV streaming package that's right for you. No annual contracts, no hidden fees. And right now, the base package, the Entertainment Plus Sports Pack, $84.98. for the first 3 months. Okay, let's go ahead and bring in my co-host, Marshall. And like I said, man, I mean, if OKC can get the job done tonight, to have, you know, three of the four series be at 2-2, that's pretty freaking cool, man.
Yeah, you really can't ask for much more. Like, and that means you're guaranteed six games for almost all of them. And as you know, normally in basketball, teams defend their home turf pretty well, unless you're Minnesota Denver this year. And so for this round, that means that you could get a couple game sevens. I know in the first round, we were praying for like five game sevens and we got what, one? So our odds, we didn't do so hot in that prediction, but, I'm going to go out and say I think we get two game sevens this round. I think we get two. I hope we get two. I think it's potentially there. So, yeah, that would be nice. And that'll be a fun one. I'm sadly, Chris, I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan, but I've lived in Texas now for 8 years, and they honestly are the worst of the four teams in that city right now. It's really sad. The Rangers won a World Series. The Stars go to the playoffs every year. The Mavs are pretty damn good, and the Dallas Cowboys are like – we're just chilling. So if I had told you when I moved down to Texas, brother, that I'd be in love with the one team that's not that good, I'd be like, oh, what the hell is going on? So I digress.
Do I have to get a sad violin already? This is early.
Maybe. So yeah. But hey
they got the Texas Longhorns and they're on the up and up. Texas is back. You do know that, right?
I'm always going to be flashing horns down in the SEC this year. So. But yeah, oh hey, we're looking good for playoffs. I know we got one series that might be a little bit quick, but three out of four, that ain't bad, sir. That ain't bad at all.
Yeah, and even if the Knicks Pacers didn't go game seven, I mean beyond game four, obviously. Sure. that shit's been fun to watch, man. That has been coming down to the wire, grinding it out in the fourth quarter. It looks like that team's going to go up. Then it looks like that team, goes over. It's been fun. It has been fun. Go ahead.
What's crazy is, like, the fact that I guess I'm getting older because I turned 40 this November, but I wonder how many, like, current NBA fans who are probably, like, under the age of, like, 32, 33. And so you see ESPN say, like, they're rebuilding their rivalry. Like, when I started watching basketball, like, it really was fun to watch the Pacers-Knicks play because it was, like, some bad blood. Nowadays, it does seem like a lot of NBA All-Stars are, like, all friends and, like, they're all buddy-buddy. It was, like, some legit, like, bad blood back in the day. So, like, when I saw – because ESPN posted an article saying the Pacers-Knicks rivalry reheating again or something like that. And it showed a picture of, like, Brunson, like, laughing with some, like, Pacer guys. Like, dude, you would not have had a picture of Charles Oakley and Dale Davis laughing with each other on ESPN, like, in the 90s. It would have been, like, them shoving each other. So it is a rivalry back again. But I just wonder, like, what the people who watch basketball nowadays, like, younger – sport fans, so like we were that age, think about now, because, like, dude, that rivalry back in the day was cold-blooded, not as friendly as it is nowadays.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a societal thing too, because they probably think it's cool that they're buddies, you know what I mean? They probably think oh, that's cool, man, they're good competitors and they're buddies, you know what I mean? So stuff to say, but you're right. And beyond, like, you know, of course, like Starts and Reggie Miller or something like that, it was like center and power forward deep. Like, both teams.
Oh, yes.
I mean, that was, like, the big boys. And we're talking big dudes.
Yes.
Like, they're not trying to shoot a three. You know,
Charles Oakley, Rick Smiths, Ewing, the Davis brothers. They weren't jacking threes. They were boxed out.
They were jacking something, though.
Yeah.
They're jacking in the mouth.
No shit.
But, yeah. You know, the one thing that we said, a couple things, actually. Halliburton's got to shoot more. Check. He got that going. The bodies can't continue to drop for the Knicks. Check. That happened. Ananobi out, the last two, and it seems like he's not going to play game five, but you never know. Maybe he'll suit up, but that he's just a spark plug player, all-purpose player, and good on both sides and whatnot, and it just, especially when you have these guards shooting so much, he's like a perfect guy to get the junkyard dog stuff. Of course, that, you know, him and Hart are the junkyard dog. Hart's going to lead the league in playoff rebounding. This guy's freaking crazy, dude. I mean, it's unbelievable. But anyway, Knicks were up 2-0, and just like that, it's tied 2-2. And game three was a fun-ass game to watch. You know, Indy, the first quarter came right out 29-20, and the fourth quarter, 26-16. Obviously, the Knicks did good in the second and third, but that was huge. That was huge. And like I said, welcome to the series, Halliburton. 35 points. Now, he made six threes, but he took 16 of those bitches, so that's a little intense. And they had four out of five starters in double digits. DiVincenzo had a great game, 7-11-3. But, you know, they definitely, you can kind of see they finally kind of caught up to him a little bit. No doubt about it. Game four, though, Brunson and DiVincenzo struggled majorly. And speaking of double digits, once again, six players in double digits for Indy. Ananobi, without him, I will say this. Alec Burks, welcome to the league. No, welcome to the playoffs. I don't think he played in the playoffs so far up until these last couple games. But the last two games, 14-20, off the bench, that's pretty solid. He is a good player. He just wasn't playing. He was in the doghouse or whatever. But, man, it just seems like they have to go to the well so much with these minutes. And, you know, a lot of people now are saying Thibodeau, although your long-term, player stuff is going to hurt him as far as wearing him out, there is something to be said in these scenarios, though, Marshall, that their body is adjusted to these minutes so they can play him. I guess you can look at the rosy side of getting your ass kicked on Sunday afternoon on ABC is, shit, those guys didn't have to play big minutes. It's a lot better than losing another close one. What are your thoughts on this series so far? And then where are we going now, man? Because, you know, the series goes back, obviously, to New York, but I'm not as confident as I once was that the Knicks are going to do it now.
I think that a lot of NBA coaches get reputations or get certain, like, habits. Like, Budenholzer, Milwaukee, was a guy that never changed his stripes. This was his game plan. This is what I'm going to do. If you don't like it, tough. And it cost him a couple of early exit playoff rounds. Tibbs has always had the reputation of my bench is shorter than a regular NBA bench. I play my starters longer. Now, as you just said, literally, as you were saying what you're saying, I was thinking in my head the same thing. Maybe the guys are adjusted, but he's a coach who's known for having shorter benches and using starters longer than average, not just like reputation. It's like sometimes stuff is hearsay or you and I are just bullshit. No, like he logistically plays his starters more than regular coaches. So that does lead to wear and tear. And so it comes down to the point of, you know, the injuries are happening now. Is this because of the wear and tear throughout the year? Maybe not. Some of it, obviously, injuries are luck, but I do think that there's somewhat of a factor. Like all these guys are
Brunson athletes, would be in the hospital already if it was just off of that.
Well, and I saw an ESPN article or segment talking about, is he tired? Well, he might be. Like shit, the dude's been putting a lot of he's been carrying a lot of backpacks on his shoulders. Like he's
been carrying that usage. It's not just the minutes; it's the usage too during those minutes, right?
Yeah, because there are ways like. Because if I ever talk NBA, the best I can talk about it would be like Curry. I'm a Golden State guy. Like there'd be times from playoff runs where he would like legit take possessions off, just kind of chill in the corner just to catch his breath. Cause obviously he was kind of a guy always running around trying to shoot his threes. So there are ways where best players can take a series or two off and just hide and catch your breath.
But he had a little bit more talent for that though.
Yeah. And Brunson, he hasn't been hiding. He really can't. He brings the ball up the court. And his usage rate's like Caitlin Clark level. Like the dude has been playing nonstop. He's been playing out of his mind, and he finally had an off game in game four, and they got ran out the gym. So I do think that Tibbs, as you mentioned, Alec Burks, he's going to have to play players he doesn't normally play. And if they step up, they can win. But if not, like you have a shorter bench than usual. You lose another guy. Obviously, Randall being out is a huge blow to them because, as you see, most days in the NBA now, if a team's an elite team or a good team this far in the playoffs, they only have two star players. Right. Obviously, you have Brunson, you have no Julius Randall. Obviously, if Julius Randall's playing a whole different series, who knows? But that's not the case. And you lose Anunoby, too. So I just think that you run out of bodies. And, like, Madison Square Garden, yes, it's got the pizzazz of a great arena, but a pizzazz doesn't give you an extra player. You have a good fan base, but and a crowd will be going crazy, but you're really running low. So honestly, if you're the Pacers, and I'll kind of wrap it up at this point because it's the one that stands out to me, you've been getting lucky, man. Like, is your team a joke? No, but you truly are a pretty bad defensive team. That's the part that kind of surprised me, Chris, because if you look at any team that's ever won a title or gone to a conference finals, they're only good defensively. The Pacers' defense is trash. They've just been.
And they got a couple of good, like, defensive players in their lineup too. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, the Pacers just they run, and they don't play great defense. But hey, first round versus Milwaukee, no Dame, no Giannis, no Bobby Portis after he threw a punch. Okay, you survive past them, and then now in this Knicks series, you have injuries again. So hey, eventually it might catch up to you. But the injury gods have been on their side, thankfully, if you're a Pacers fan. So again, they're a good team and they can score again. When they get hot. Cause you have that nice rarity of having a big that can really shoot the three ball. Like Turner, when he trails on plays, he loves to spot up top of the point and shoot threes, and he's good at it. So that is a different defensive coverage for a team to adapt to. But I just think that they score too much. The Knicks don't have enough bodies to match them. I do think the Pacers win the series. I think they win it at home for game six. I just think the Knicks have too many injuries to overcome, and your bench players don't have the – I shouldn't say experience because, like, all these guys play in the NBA. But they maybe don't have the confidence, or the team doesn't have all the unity and the roles they've played together. Like, you're just asking for a lot of guys to play more than they're used to, and it's not the star power they need. So I do think the Pacers win it in six.
So you're changing your prediction now, right?
Yes. Yeah. Correct. Yes, sir.
Well, I don't do that. It is worrisome. I'm glad I didn't bet the series. And I could see that. I mean, I don't think it would be, to be honest with you, I don't think they'll win the next two games, because that'd be three, or boy, that'd be four in a row then. I don't think that'll happen, but I could see it in seven. But I already picked it, so I'm not going to, I'm not going to go back on it. But, yeah, this is fun, though, because, like I said, three out of these four games have been phenomenal. And it's funny, moving to Denver and Minnesota, the first game was the shit. That shit was just a slugfest. It was awesome. It was a great game. And you're like, dude, we have ourselves a series. And then blowout. Now, last night's game was competitive. It was a good game. But Dallas was just too strong. So it's all tied up 2-2. Game five tomorrow back in Denver. It's crazy. It's very rare. Especially when you have, a 2 and a 3 seed, winning on the road, both games. It didn't surprise me that game, I did kind of think it'd be 1-1 in Minnesota, but I didn't think it'd be 2. The big thing about game three, Murray, 18 points in the first half, definitely got his game going. They were moving the ball a lot more. Just in general, you saw Jokic and Gordon, especially in game four, Jokic and Gordon a lot of times they end up with the rebound anyway, those two. But after a make for the Timberwolves, you'd see Gordon and or Jokic bringing the ball up, running the show more, taking the ball up, getting the ball out of Murray's hands, have him run around. So then, Marshall, first of all, you don't really want to go. You don't want to have your bigs that far down the court if you're going to pick them up, that 90 feet, You don't really want to do that. Now, Nas is pretty quick-footed, but you still just don't want to do that, because that's another thing. I noticed that Rudy early in the game, whether you think it was a foul or not, Rudy early in the game last night was covering Porter way out there, putting a lot of pressure on him, and I would have loved to see how that play ended. Before they called the foul. I will say in game three and game four, no surprise, they did call a tighter whistle. And that's no excuse, because, first of all, the NBA has a tight whistle compared to what we were just talking about, right, in the 90s, obviously, we know that. It's loosened up, though, in the last part of the season, and it always loosens up a little bit in the playoffs. But you have to adjust. So I'm not using that as an excuse, but it is an advantage, especially with Jokic, because that dude, he is one of those guys, and there's several guys in the league that can get away with elbows, but the second you lay a half an elbow on him, it's a foul. And that's just how it goes. But bringing the ball up, having Murray be on the run, passing it to him so he's on the move, then Jokic gets in that, elbow area, and once he gets the ball there, it's pretty much a wrap. So I thought that was huge. Game four, man. I mean, the end of the quarter, second quarter, that 8-0 run kind of broke their back. Ant was phenomenal. But when you look at Cat, 5 of 18, he only had a little, moments of success. A lot of guys you could say that about, where you're just like, man, they had these little glimmer of, these moments, but they didn't play good enough. Ant definitely needed help. But overall, just the energy, being backed against the wall, losing your first two games of the series when you're the favorite, they just switched it on him, man, and they made some really good adjustments. I'll say that.
I'm hoping, much like when
make that point about those days off, too, that you said before we hit record.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that you have the karma I got, because when the Washington Nationals won the World Series against Houston in 2019, every single road team won. I think it was the first time
ever in sports history that the home teams
were 0-7. So I'm hoping that that transfers over. You'd be fine if your boys win Game 7 on the road. That's fine. So I'm hoping that happens for the second time in sports history. That'd be cool. So as I was saying, if it comes down to kind of a heat pack, honestly. So when Murray trucked the heat pack on the court, if that heat pack had hit a player or someone slipped
on it. Or if Towns slipped on it.
Yeah, then he's out for game three, and the series is probably it's probably a wrap. So and
you wouldn't have put 18 in that first quarter in the third, that's for sure.
No. Because a lot of ESPN people said that, hey, we think it'll be suspended. They're like, well, the refs didn't miss it, but you can clearly see on videotape that he threw a heat pack on the court out of frustration. So if he'd been suspended
in the regular season, he would have been.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, the booze inspired me to go out game three. So, damn, that. I mean, if you're a Wolves fan, which you are obviously way, way more than me, it's like, that would have been, because he did something that was improper, and, like, thankfully no one did get hurt, but, damn, if that hits a foot, he's probably out. But he did play. Unfortunately, that did not occur. And he went off game three. Jokic had a good game last night. I will say for Denver, I do think the biggest thing that helped them from a Nugget standpoint is the fact they had days off. Like, they got their ass whooped game two. And as a Wolves fan, just because I'm a little bit of a fan, and also I have that ticket for them to win the Western Conference Finals, I was like, all right, here we go. But it was like, okay, well, we got to wait Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Like, dude, if you were Denver, you had film sessions.
Back in the lab.
Yeah, you had Mike Malone probably chewing you apart. Hell, he went off, in which I don't know how he didn't get tossed out of game two, because he, like, stormed the court like,
dude,
he was.
He's ran on the court twice now in this series. Can we at least call a tech?
And then the ref saying, well, we were showing patience. Dude, he stormed. Like, I don't know how he didn't get a tech. But I think that.
And we're not, by the way, guys that scream for a tech every other second either.
No.
These are basic run-of-the-mill stuff.
Yeah, to see a guy, and then the ref after the game said he did not use improper language. I'm not a good lip reader, but I think there was a couple F-bombs in that rant. So, but Denver caught their breath. As you said, they came out with some fire, because that's what a championship team does. And game three, it was kind of a role reversal of game two. I'm with you last night. I thought game four would be a Wolves victory, obviously. I think the biggest part that surprised me out of game four was just the Denver players who are not named Jokic and Murray outplayed the Wolves players not named Ant. Like,
Gordon was out of his mind too, but you're right. The bench too. The bench played, stood up.
That Gordon started the game 11 for 11. He missed his last shot to go 11 for 12. Reggie Jackson hit a couple threes that Bron from KU had a nice game. So normally in NBA playoffs, the home team role players do better on the home than on the away. Alexander Walker had a tough game. J-Mac had a tough game. So, like, a lot of the Wolves, like, key guys just couldn't get the rhythm. And Anthony Edwards played out of his mind, 43, 44 points last night, which is amazing, but he had no one really to help him. The biggest thing to me, and I'll just say this to you to kind of give my thought, because you watch him play a lot more than I did. The thing that I noticed about the Wolves in the home games, I feel that when they get in their rut, their ball movement, I feel that sometimes just, like, they don't pass the ball that well. Like, I don't have a statistic, like, written down on paper. But I felt in game three and game four, when they allowed Denver runs, a lot of Wolves' offensive possessions are one to two passes max. And when they kind of rush it, it becomes the ball is not spread around. Like, when you watch them play game two, man, they were doing like three to four passes and leading up to open shots. I felt last night, especially in the first half, the Wolves were just, it was very ISO basketball related. And it's like, well, there's no ball movement. And then you give up that 26-4 run. So, the ball wasn't being spread around as it should for a team that has, I mean, not, a lot of just good overall shooters. So it seemed the ball was stationary. My one other point, which I did write down last night, when the game really got pulled apart, for some reason, I know there was foul troubles, but for like a 3-minute gap there, they had Karl Anthony Towns, Ant, and Gobert all off the court. And yes, fouls were an issue, but that was really where the game spread open, because if you saw on ESPN, the Wolves with Anthony Edwards on the court last night were +5. And for the 3 minutes he was out of the game, they were, or 5 minutes he was out of the game, they were -13. So I'm not saying
this is interesting, though, because I don't know if that tells the story fully off how the game went, because he was on the court for that 8-0 run at the, you know what I mean? So I don't know if it was that. I would say it's more of what you're saying. I'll let you finish your point, though.
Okay. Yeah, I just think that when, in my head, I was like, I was looking at my TV. I was like, you have no Cat, Ant, or Gobert?
I just think that costed him the game is all I'm saying.
To me, that was the part where it's like, who's going to score the ball? And again, that was where Denver went a little bit of a run. I was just surprised. And I do know that it's typical NBA where, hey, you have two fouls, you got to sit out. We don't want you to get a third of the first half. I just thought that, well, obviously those guys shouldn't be getting in foul trouble all the first quarter, but you were taking a really ballsy risk at that early in the game. I think sometimes as a coach, you have to trust your guys not to pick up a third, especially when one's the defense player of the year and Anthony Edwards is a good defender himself. Cat has his moments, but that was just one point I wrote down. And yeah, the ball movement was a little iso ballish, but hey, let's keep that road trading up and let's see the Wolves win tomorrow night at that late 9:30 tip. The bedtimes, man. I'm happy I got this week off, because 9:30 tip offs, man, it makes a man stay up late.
Yeah. See, I'm a night owl, so it's perfect. but yeah, going back to the point of ball movement, that actually has been the thing. See, both Ant and Cat, Ant played great, but still, the last two games, he didn't play great. He had some buckets at the part of the game three that didn't count.
Sure. Really. Oh, yes.
But you're right. Both Ant and Cat sometimes are so good at offense that at times this season, the ball gets sticky. And they think, you know what, I'm just going to do this. And that was kind of the mode that Ant was in, and it was working for a while because we needed someone to score. But in the same breath, you do have to rely on your teammates. And you know, either way, you're losing the game by double digits most of the time. So, but yeah, you're right. That's kind of been – that's the reason why we weren't like a top five, top eight offense throughout the year. And that has a lot to do with it. Moving on. To the Mavs, OKC, Dallas now up 2-1. They did manage to go 1-1 and go home. Game two, Chet struggled from three. You know, Luka had a strong game. Is obviously, you know, he's been looking hampered by injury to an extent anyways. You could really tell in that first series he shot the ball horribly from three. That seems like it's coming back, but he's banged up. It's the knee, then it's the ankle. Then he, you know, got tripped and fell on the, you know, busted up his nose and his teeth, it looked like. But he's a gamer, and we talked before we hit record. Luckily, he doesn't rely on speed. Otherwise, he would be screwed. So his game kind of fits being a little gimpy. But the big thing about this series that we talked about, you have the two scorers, then there's a drop-off. Now, the role players have made the defense better. And, you know, Kyrie and Luka are playing a little bit better. Like, yeah, I guess you could say, because neither of them are great defenders, especially Luka. But I'd say they're – I don't know if I'd say significantly better, but they are playing better defense. I got to give them credit. But Tim Hardaway in that game two, 17 points off the bench. P.J. Washington game two. 7 for 11 from Trey. I mean, that was freaking crazy, man. Game three was a great back and forth game. You know, Oklahoma City just could never overtake the lead in the fourth quarter. There was a spurt there where they went on like a 9-0 run and got a little bit of a lead in the third, only for Dallas to come right back, kind of overtake it. And you know, Luka and Kyrie did enough in that game. But once again, five more threes from PJ Washington. It feels like, does this thing just come down to health for Luka as long as he can be where he's at right now and not get any worse? Are they just going to win the series? Or, you know, like we said, if they steal one tonight and get it back-to-back, going back to game five, here we are with 3-2-2 series.
Yeah, to me it seems like this series just kind of confuses me, I guess, because whenever I watch a play, like the teams struggle more offensively than I expected. I thought this would be just a little more of an offensive, I'm not saying it's been low scoring, but I just seem to see it, when I'm watching the games, but it seems like offensively they struggle a bit. I don't know who OKC's second best player is. I think Shai Gilgeous has been doing his part the best he can. And it's like, who else on the team is going to step up to help SGA? I don't know. But they also are a young team. As we talked about in our playoff preview show, or when this whole thing started a month ago, this team is like, they're probably a little bit ahead of their script. Like, this OKC team has been having great draft picks and bringing the people. Like, they probably weren't expected to get quite this far, quite this soon. So you do have guys like Chet and Giddy and the Jalen Williams part one and part two, like J-Dub and whoever. So, you know, I get confused with those guys. But maybe this is just the inexperience that they have to go through, which almost every NBA team does when you start your run, is that you're going to get bounced out earlier than you want. So I think experience is showing a little bit. And for Dallas, again, if Luka can survive, they're going to be good. But damn, that dude, I can't believe this, Chris, because I was even talking to my coworkers about it. ESPN continuously was writing about last week about how Luka's banged up, Luka's hurt, Luka can't hit. Like, every article I see every day is some ESPN writer saying Luka's injured, Luka's hurt, Luka's tired, Luka's sore. But then you go watch him play, and he does his part. So he clearly is not 100%, but I guess Luka at 80% is still a really fucking good basketball player. And PJ Washington and Gafford are playing really good ball. That Washington, all that dude does is chill in a corner and jack threes. Like, if you had his shot chart, Chris, it would just be corner, corner, corner. And I was thinking about that. Why does that happen? Well, it happens because you have guys like Kyrie and Luka who are so good with the ball that you can't afford to, like, you almost got to double them, or they can get past who's guarding them.
Yeah, you got to live with PJ Washington hitting 7 threes if it happens.
Yeah, because I swear every Mavs game I watch, you watch these guys jack up corner threes that are wide open. Well, shit, it's because for the last 3 to 4 years, it's either been Luka or Brunson or Kyrie, like someone who has the ball can't really be covered on by one man. And then boom, corner three, boom, corner three. Like, that's something I feel like, Chris, like, I think I've seen Maxi Kiebler hit like 75 threes in his career out in the, you know, because all these role player guys, but to their credit, Chris, they're doing their part. Like Denver last night, Denver's role players shot out their damn minds. So to give Dallas credit, their role players are making shots. They're doing their part. I do think if Luka holds on, they are able to advance. But, like, what – I feel like he's one injury away from, like, really being – now he's, like, instead of being 80% Luka, now he's maybe down to, like, 50 or 60. Like, how much more can that dude's body take? I don't know.
Yeah, and there's this stat I saw. Luka is currently shooting 94% at the rim in the playoffs. The only problem is he's only getting there twice a game because he can't move. Because usually he gets there almost 4 times a game. So that is something you got to watch. And when they did knock off in game two, when they knocked him off in, you know, the Thunder, that night was the first loss in over a month for OKC, you know, because they finished the season on a streak, and then obviously they swept.
Nola.
Yep. And the last time they were defeated was April 5th in Indiana, and they hadn't lost a home game since March 27th, so it was kind of weird. Just like the Timberwolves, it was so weird that they had such a long break before playing another game at Target Center, because you just don't think of it, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's right. They had a sweep. Didn't play again, then they had, you know, then there was like a 5 days off, and then they had 2 games, and then there's another 3 days off. So I saw this tweet. He said, I'm really watching basketball for 5 hours to see Tatum and Shea shoot a combined 45 free throws. Because, you know, both those guys get to the line a lot.
Sure.
And Shea actually, you know how in the last couple months, we talked about this a little while ago, and it's been talked about now nationally somewhat, how the NBA actually tweaked how they called the game a little bit. And Shea's numbers since they tweak have gone considerably down in the regular season. Okay, he's having a great playoffs. I'm not saying that, but it's something to keep an eye on when it comes to that. But, you know, just as a fan, I really hope OKC, obviously Chet, you know, is from Minneapolis and stuff like that. But I just for a fan's sake to have, like we mentioned, 3 out of 4, that'd be big. But I just don't see you know, I still just think Dallas is going to win. Just like we both picked Dallas. I don't think either one of us are moving off that. Nope. Boston, well, we called it. They're going to slip up. They're going to slip up and mess up one, and it's going to be a gentleman's sweep. Now, we didn't call the gentleman's sweep just yet, but they slipped up. And honestly, they slipped up at home, too, dude. After winning game one, they slipped up and lost the home game, dude. It's just like, seriously, dude? D-White, though, game one was ridiculous. Brown has been really solid. A lot of solid play by everyone. But you do have Tatum playing like, on a notch lower than he normally plays. His shot's been off. He hasn't been playing all that well. So that's still something they could take to another level. I think as a team they could take it to a new level too. And maybe having such a long, a large lead for so long, Marshall, in the last part of the season, they were just kind of in a mode of like, we don't really need this game because whatever. But they did secure home court anyway, for the whole thing if they made it to the finals. So, even last year, Denver, the last month, didn't play all that great because they had a lead, remember, for a long time?
Yeah.
Then they tightened up, they turned it on, but that hasn't happened just yet. And, I think the Celtics were already like an 8.5-point favorite, and now – per Wojo, no Donovan Mitchell tonight. So, that's game, set, match. I think it'll be interesting to see what Cleveland and what Mitchell, what his ultimate future is going to be and whatnot. I do really like the team. For their sake, I do wish Allen, played. Right now, because they need another big body, because Mobley's playing good. He got a little banged up in that game, but I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at it right now. They got off to a good 8-2 start. Maybe it's a fake Wojo or something. Maybe Mitchell did actually play, or they're just getting off here early. But there's just no way Cleveland's gonna win this one, man. Unless it's like, of course, some kind of crazy, crazy injuries or whatever. But what do you see? You think the Celtics are just kind of, not getting challenged? Maybe they need this thing to go 2-2, and then they'll blow them out the next two games and win the series. I don't know.
No, I did check scores. He's not playing, so. No, I think that I kicked myself because I was like, I told a buddy of mine from work texted me, hey, should I bet the Celtics game one? And I was like, well, I said, they normally always blow a game in their series for the last last 2-3 years. They let that one slip. But I even told him, I was like, but it's normally not game one. So I told myself, right, game two, I'm going to bet the Cleveland Cavaliers money line. And I had a busy day. I forgot about it. Of course they won. So that's what the Celtics done. Last handful of years, they let one game slide and take care of business in the other four. I think they do the same tonight. Obviously, there's no Mitchell. Even though they're at home in Cleveland, I don't see LeBron coming back tonight either. So I just think that this series is who's gonna go off tonight for Cleveland that's going to beat the Celtics? Like, they had their one slip-up, which they do. but it's really only one slip up. Like they had one slip up with the Heat and they worked the Heat out the gym and they did the same shit last year. So, I think Boston wins this thing out.
It's because they rely on too much threes, dude.
Like true. That is true. Yes.
Threes. And so that, you know, cause when they're on, man, and healthy, they do look like the best team, but that's, you know, I don't know.
I'm with you. I think if Mitchell was able to play today, maybe it's a closer game, obviously, but with him out, and they've had a bit of an injury bug too. It could really come down to the fact that the Eastern Conference Finals could be Indiana and Boston simply due to they're the healthiest teams left. Maybe they're not the best, but as we've seen year after year, brother, like, you know, a lot of people say Golden State won a title because of the Kyrie injury, and a lot of people, and I would feel that I think we lost title because of Clay's injury. Like, playoff injuries do happen. It's part of basketball. It sucks. I wish we would always have a healthy roster for every team because that's how you want to see it, but that's not the case. Like, it's a long season. It's wear and tear on legs, and fluke stuff happens. So
didn't even mention a Durant getting hurt either. I like that. That's good. right, though. It happens. That's what happens. It does,
unfortunately.
I remember Sam Cassell got hurt, you know, late Sacramento series, and, you know, just never, you know, still took the Lakers to six, but probably would have got to the finals playing Detroit. Would have been a better matchup for Detroit, but, you know, shit happens, man. It is what it is.
Unfortunately, true. So, yeah, well, I would love to talk about that series going to six on our next show, but I don't see that happening, my friend, unfortunately.
Yeah, so, I agree.
On that note, we're hoping for our podcast sake that we're going to have three game sixes at least, hopefully a couple game sevens. We'll see how the OKC versus Luka show goes tonight. But on that note, we'll be back next week. We appreciate the love and support. Go out and enjoy this nice summer weather, which is kind of sweeping across the country as long as thunderstorms are not happening. And, yeah, the boys are out tonight. Have a good one. Peace.